The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors? Not just across town, but across the country. How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome back to Global Reach. This is a show that helps your business find opportunities, manage risks, and develop strategies for winning in the global marketplace. So what's the best way to convince clients and potential clients that your firm is really something special? In this crowded global marketplace, how do you differentiate your company? Well, my guest, Karen Schneider, Director of Global Product Marketing and Programs for Capgemini's Financial Services Business Unit, has the answer: strategic content marketing. Karen has developed thought leadership into marketing strategies that generate millions in revenue for her company. Welcome to Global Reach, Karen. I've been really looking forward to this interview.
Thanks, Tay. Me too. I think it's going to be exciting and looking forward to talking.
And I expect we're all going to learn a lot.
I hope so.
Let me tell the audience a little bit about you first.
Sure.
As a high-spirited kayaking mother of two and dynamic marketing pioneer, Karen has successfully brought products and services to market for leaders like Citigroup and Philips. And for more than the last decade, for Capgemini, a top five global consultancy. Karen has launched over 36 strategic thought leadership reports, and she's established the World Report franchise as a distinct brand differentiator with an industry-renowned reputation. Properties include the World Payments Report, and we've had a guest on the show, Deb Baxley, a colleague of Karen's, to talk about the World Payments Report, and the World Wealth Report. These are co-produced with RBS and RBC Wealth Management. Karen is also responsible for building an on-offshore product marketing function that is pretty unique. She has taken 10 strategic products to market over 3 years, which to me is amazing. Her work in strategic content marketing, campaign demand generation, and brand differentiation has led to her current passion, creating dynamic customer experiences by digitally transforming thought leadership, ultimately providing both better value to clients and more satisfying interactive exchanges. Her work regularly drives sales enablement, resulting in multi-million dollar revenue generation, something we would all like to do. So, Global Reach, we're very fortunate to have you, and again, welcome to the show. Karen, okay. Let's start with a definition. What exactly is strategic content marketing?
I think it's a great question, Tay, and the answer is really, to me, very simple, because data and findings are kind of just that. They're facts, right? They state the specifics of a particular snapshot as it occurs at a specific point in time. So what makes content different? For me, content has intrinsic value. It brings meaning to the reader. It provides insights. It suggests things to think about or to consider. Plus, it puts a lens around what's happening on a relevant topic or a set of findings or data. So it gives that lens and a view in a way that gives you much more of a holistic picture.
So what makes the content strategic and truly valuable for a reader who is, you know, beset by information and written in white papers?
I think what makes it valuable the most is that it solves a problem that someone has or a specific issue that's occurring in the marketplace. So, for instance, you see things like, you know, regulation. as a topic in business that just, it drives so many different issues that people really need someone to come in and help to put a lens on that and show different insights into different areas of it so that you can learn how to solve the problems that you've got around regulation, for instance, compliance or reporting or dealing with data.
I get the informative side and the value. How do you make it engaging so people really want to read it, to look at it?
I think some of that has to go with, you know, if you have actionable insights that people can get from what you're reading, and they really get a sense for the fact that this is going to help me to do my job on a day-to-day basis, that makes a huge change. In terms of getting that to be engaging itself, it comes from a lot of the different formats we see in the marketplace today, and we see that all over the place. So you see different ways of presenting information and recognizing the fact that people process information in different ways and they want it in different formats.
What are some of the formats that work the best?
You know, I always laugh at that question because, you know, it really is different for everyone in terms of how they process information. But if you look trend-wise, very digestible storylines are really key right now. So what formats lend themselves to that? Things like infographics. You know, they've changed so much since when companies like USA Today first started to trend them in print. Now they're graphic, they're vivid, they're chock full of useful data. They've got factoids and links that let you go deeper and navigate easier. So they're great visual roadmaps into topics, and people love them. Tweets, social media, you know, a clear indication of how people are drawn to new formats today. You know, can you say it in 144 characters or less? Make it simple, crisp, and concise.
So here's a question. I traditionally think of thought leadership as a report. I mean, the World Payments Report is quite detailed and long. White papers, participation in conferences, articles. But how do you condense that into a tweet?
it's not as easy as it sounds, you know. And I think you have to really, again, break things up. You're seeing more and more of the bigger picture print pieces taken into, again, these digestible chunks, if you will. So how do you then segment it down even further to 144 tweets? For me, one of the tools we use is a message map, which is getting really clear on what are the core key messages, and then framing out the specific proof points and the differentiating themes that the content has. And then what you do is you tweet just on those themes. You know, you don't have to cover everything. You have to cover some really key golden nuggets that tweak people's interests, and then you give them the opportunity to go deeper by reading the full-fledged report.
And one of the things I've noticed, I get the Globalist almost every day, and that could be my whole day's reading, just that one email if you click through. But notice that some of the articles that they click through to actually come with tweets on the side, kind of preset tweets for their readers to use. Do you do that?
Yeah, we're just starting that. Yeah, I've started to see that a lot in the last, I'd say, 6 months, where people are actually now taking tweets and accompanying them with other content. And again, it's that same idea that, you know, in the first 30 seconds, you have to grab somebody, and then you have to give them the opportunity to go somewhere else. Where do you want them to go? And today's, hot trend is they want people to go to Twitter.
The new way of doing the who, what, why, where, when, and how.
Yep.
So has digital format then changed the way people think about thought leadership?
I think it's changed. I don't know that the format's necessarily changed it. I do believe that the issues in our society and in business have really changed it. And it's the fact that, you know, we're all trying to do more with less. We're all trying to operate so much faster. So it follows that because the pressure is there on people to be able to deal with so much information and they have to deal with it intelligently and quickly, they have to have formats that allow them to do that. So it changes because we want things in a different way in order to function better. So we don't necessarily think about just thought leadership differently. We think about everything differently. And it's, you know, what's going to allow us to do our jobs better quicker and more effectively.
So, I have a question. You mentioned to me when we were setting up the show that Capgemini doesn't advertise, but your promotional activities, your marketing activities are really all centered around strategic content, thought leadership.
Right. I wouldn't say that we don't not advertise. We do advertise, of course, but it has a different place in time. And in specifically our area where we're pushing financial services, what we find is that, you know, consultants are intellectual property. You buy intellectual property from us, so you're looking for where is that real value.
And so is that why Capgemini decided to base its marketing on strategic content and thought leadership?
That is why Capgemini Financial Services decided to base it on that. And we very specifically do it for three or four different reasons, which include credibility. Like I said, consultants are intellectual property. So how do we prove to people that we have the intellectual property that they need? Thought leadership is a great way to do that because they buy our knowledge. They buy our domain expertise. So if we have a forum where we can show them not only what it is, but why it's good and why it's better, then people have a greater tendency to believe and trust in us as partners, right? Because they realize that we understand the market. We understand where they're coming from. And we try to keep our strategic content incredibly entrenched in where the market is. So what are our clients' problems and issues? And what's our experience in helping them? Because as a global consultancy in 30 markets, you can imagine, we've got a lot of expertise in actual practical resolution of people's problems. So we try to garner those best practices and share them for our client base and for the market at large.
How did you build this thought leadership function? Because as you say, consultants have intellectual capital, but how did you build this as an actual function that as a company you can tap into?
You know, it started out, again, the same way with investments in addressing client issues, right? So, you know, a client has an issue in a given market, and they need information, and they need it in a certain way, and they want to know how they're going to be successful. So, you know, it starts from that base always, which is that it's grounded in where the market is. And so for us, it started in the fact that we needed to be in those places and we needed to be deep into those topic areas. So clients, you know, initiated some of those initial requests for, can you help us in this way? And so we started to build it. And one of the first properties that we built was in the wealth management space and was around, you know, how do we track and size the movements of high net worth individuals in the marketplace. And that's really how it started. So again, answering a market demand or a specific client need was where we started. And then starting to realize just how much all of our clients needed the information and looking to have and build a community of people. Not different than you see today in terms of building social communities. You know, people really need to have places that they can go to get that information and partners that they can trust to do it. And we were in a unique position between the market and our clients to provide some of that. So we started to tap into the triangulation of client, industry association, and consulting expertise, and bringing that to bear in our thought leadership. So that's how we started to build it.
So talk about, you have a marketing strategy based on thought leadership. Talk about the marketing side of strategic content marketing. How do you actually use it to market Capgemini expertise?
It's one of the things I love because I've actually built most of my career around it. I mean, we have so many channels available to us in marketing, and a marketer's best friend is you know, having content. And so we're able to really take content, and I pride myself on being able to turn that content across all marketing channels. So we use it across seven channels. They include public relations, analyst relations, social media, the web, e-marketing, telesales, and events. And the way in which we use it is, again, to stick to an issue and to develop materials and assets, a whole slew of assets that we use to launch a report. So it can be everything from an email to the specific web content that we'll build. We have recently built some very interactive websites that allow for a different level of engagement. Public relations, including, you know, press releases, doing media briefings, interviews on a regular basis, developing byline articles on some of the sub-themes in the reports. Those are just a few of the ways. Events, direct events. We always launch with a major external market event. We do roadshows. We partner with industry associations like EFMA, the European Marketing Association. It allows us to do roadshows in local markets, so we try to take the content from global to local. But that's basically how we turn it. And then what we do, too, which I think is most important, is not just the marketing side, it's the sales side. How do you use thought leadership for sales enablement, right? So they're great door openers. When you have a report and you've interviewed a set of clients, you have the opportunity as a business development executive to go back to that client and say, let me tell you about the findings now, 6 months to a year later. So you get several touch points along the way of the development of the report and the launch of the report to go back in and have a conversation with that client about what is happening in the market. And by the way, how do you stack up relative to not only your competition, but other markets around the world? And are there things you can learn from other markets as opposed to your own that might prove interesting for you in the way in which you deal with your business?
I love pulling things out of cross-industry, but we've got to go to break now. I'm getting clued by the station. So when we get back, I want to look more about strategic content marketing and brand differentiation, and then some of the real, how do you do this? How do you put out 36 reports? How do you put out 10 reports in 3 years? Really, there's a lot for us to learn. So don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
Want to be empowered to take your leadership skills to the next level in your business? Tune into A Sharp Outlook, Best Practices for Success, with host Angela Sharp. Using industry-specific materials, toolkits, and expert guests from all facets of business, our program will empower you to develop a strong core in your business leadership, infrastructure, growth, and technology. A Sharp Outlook airs live every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the second segment of Global Reach. I'm here with my guest, Karen Schneider, from Capgemini's Financial Services Business Unit. And we are talking about strategic content marketing and generating revenue. So, Karen, talk about the strategic content marketing as a brand differentiator. It's a crowded marketplace. How do you make not just Capgemini, but how do you make the World Report franchise, your thought leadership, stand out as a brand differentiator?
Okay, I think that's a great question. We have a couple of things that I think make us unique and allow us to use it as a brand differentiator. One is the fact that, as I mentioned, part of our model is that we always go to market with a client. So in terms of both the development of the report and the go-to-market, we have that very distinct pulse on the market at all times, from the development of the report all the way throughout. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that, you know, we have an incredible team in terms of our market intelligence team, as well as our centers of excellence that help us to both develop and take the reports to market. So the combination between, you know, making sure that we have a client integrally baked into the development of the report keeps us very relevant and helps keep us on track, along with our centers of excellence and the market intelligence team. The centers of excellence really engage an entire network of subject matter experts around the world when we're developing a report. And that dialogue in country, you know, really makes a difference. So
now, are your centers of excellence, the experts, are they all Capgemini employees, or do you have outside experts as well?
When I refer to centers of excellence, it is Capgemini experts, but we also do use external experts as well. So we will also partner with an industry association, as I've mentioned, or we will be tapping into regulatory bodies. In some of our reports, we tap into groups like the European Banking Commission. We can be working with any number of federal or local regulators to get insights, or market association experts as well. Within our clients, there are many experts. On the wealth management side, we could be tapping into one of our own bank's economists. They have economists or financial advisors. There can be payments experts, for instance, on the World Payments Report, people who have been leading or dealing in transaction banking for, you know, 30, 40 years. So these are all people with quite in-depth industry knowledge and practical experience working within the industry. So you get it from all aspects, from literally being within the industry as, say, a banker or an insurer, or from having worked in one of those institutions, or being on our side as one of the consulting experts who's worked with companies like that for years. So I think we have it pretty well covered. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the external experts that we can tap into for any topic. You know, say we're dealing with social media or digital transformation, we may go and find experts in those areas as well.
So, Karen, your colleague and my friend, Deborah Baxley, who's been a guest on Global Reach several times, most recently she was on in November to talk about the Capgemini World Bank of Scotland World Payments Report. In fact, she was on with Teresa Connor from RBS. I love the report. It looks at innovative offerings in the payment space and the impact on the payments value chain, and we had some great reaction to it. And it literally covers the globe. So this is a huge, time-consuming effort. Can you walk us through the process of how you put a report like that together?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I think it starts with development, and obviously, you know, where is the market topic most relevant? So we do a lot of brainstorming with our clients to go through, you know, what is going to be the topic of the report. In addition, our market intelligence team will have looked at from the past year, what was the feedback on the report? What are things that people have wanted us to talk about? We do some surveying, too, when we do our road shows as well. And then we look again at the market trends to go through and decide what is the topic for the report. In addition to that, the Capgemini has really invested quite heavily in what we call repeatable models that we're able to run on a year-over-year basis. So we'll make a big investment in looking at a specific area that we think is repeatable or will be a trend over the next few years. So, for instance, a few years back, we developed what we call the Customer Experience Index. And that's a way specifically of measuring how customers feel about the experiences they have in terms of very specific transactions with their bank or with their insurer. So it'll cover the customer life cycle in terms of different types of transactions that they make, everything from information gathering to actual purchasing to servicing, et cetera. And we've developed a very specific model for coming up with a ranking of who has the best customer experience ratings in a given set of countries.
So how do you do that?
We do a survey. The market intelligence team conducts a very large survey of over 15,000 customers on one report, and I think it's over 18,000 on another. And they go out and they actually get that direct data from the marketplace. In addition to that, we supplement it with interviews and case studies. So that's another big portion of the report. And then we focus on a spotlight section. Our reports are pretty much broken up into two parts. There's usually the portion that covers the repeatable model, like the Customer Experience Index, and there's a spotlight on a very specific topic. So you mentioned the World Payments Report. This year that topic was around payments acquisition. And the report...
Could you define that for our audience? Not everybody out there is a payments person.
Right, it's more around, you know, how do you go through the process of payments acquisition in terms of the payments themselves and acquiring different forms for making payments in the marketplace.
So how do you issue the report? I see the highlights. I've seen the slideshow, which is the essentially PDF presentation. Is it also? Do you also print a paper report?
Yes, the report is, as I mentioned, the seven channels that we discussed. The report is launched across those seven channels. So we will do everything from issuing a press release to running byline articles and doing media pitches to having a printed report copy. But as you know, most people want soft copies, so we do e-marketing to a very, very wide distribution list that comes from repeat subscribers who have asked to get the report on a regular basis. We run web banners in key publications and where we know our audience lives and breathes in terms of their reading. And we all.
And that note, by the way, if anybody out there wants to download a copy of the report, there is a web banner on the Global Reach host page at voiceamerica.com, so you can click on that banner and get the report.
Right. You can come to our websites. We have a website for each of the reports individually, and you can also go to capgemini.com/financial services, and you'll find all of our reports there, and as well as our other thought leadership from our market intelligence team, too.
So 15,000 interviews. How do you accomplish 15,000 interviews for one report? I mean, I've done reports for 30 years, so I know the kind of work that goes into that. 15,000 interviews?
Yeah, it's quite an endeavor, and they do utilize both the market intelligence team and a third party to do a lot of online research as well. But they develop a very detailed questionnaire guide. In addition to that, when we're doing the interviews that supplement that, they have a full-fledged executive interview guide that we use with our subject matter experts. So, you know, it's quite an endeavor. The reports take about a year to develop, and we start quite early in the year, you know, developing the topic and the content. And the questionnaires and the way in which we do the surveying is a large portion of the way in which we bring them to market. So it's really key that they start early and that they have all of the questionnaire worked out and know kind of where they're going to need the analysis time on the back end when the data comes in. And then it's a lot of relentless work on them making sure that they have follow-up to get to the numbers or the minimum requirements in each country that we want, because we also want to make sure that we have even representation,
right,
or as even as possible, and certainly, you know, statistically valid return.
You have to be a pretty tough wrangler to get all that to come out together.
And our team is very good at doing that.
You've developed a very interesting onshore-offshore model. Do you want to tell us more about that?
Sure. You know, fundamentally, I mean, while we talk about the practices offshore, onshore, the truth is we really are one team, always. And Captiv and I prides themselves on having a one-team model, which means that it's really seamless to anyone working with us, whether or not the resources are onshore or offshore. And onshore and offshore can be anywhere, but it is what we call a blended model. And way we work is really some program tasks tend to lend themselves better to wherever we've built up the capabilities, and that could be onshore or offshore. For instance, our market intelligence team is based in Hyderabad, so the report development is based there. But the team works directly with an entire global network of subject matter experts and our center of excellences. Also, portions of them are based there, where some of them are based onshore as well. But it's really a network that we're developing, whether it's an onshore resource or an offshore resource, and they collectively act very seamlessly with our clients and with the marketplace. They're from over 30 different countries, and it works quite well, especially when you start to realize that there's efficiencies in being able to have a team of people who are used to doing a certain type of work all in one place, and that's what they do for a living every day. It makes them really proficient in what they do and how they deliver things, and we are able to tap into a wealth of expertise between these networks. And a lot of people will circulate between jobs within those teams.
You've mentioned centers of excellence a number of times. So I would take it the centers have different functions or different sets of expertise. Can you give us some illustrations of what those centers of excellence are?
Sure. We have centers of excellence in a variety of domains. They go everywhere from payments is obviously cards and payments is one area. We have that's where the World Payments Report gets driven from. And we also have wealth management. We have insurance, and we have two different types within that. We have life insurance as well as P&C, property and casualty. We also have core banking, and that's another very popular area. We have risk and compliance as well. So those are just some of them.
All of these reports, and you're talking about a year per report, it's a huge investment. What kind of investment are we talking about, dollar or euro?
Sure. Well, the investments, obviously, there's a financial investment, and that's a piece of it, but it certainly goes well beyond that. We are talking per report in the investment area of thousands of dollars, of hundreds of thousands of dollars. They range anywhere. You can be, you know, as low as about 250, and they can go up much higher than that, close to a million.
Karen, a lot of our listeners are from much smaller companies.
Mm-hmm.
How can they get their start in strategic content marketing?
Oh, I think a lot of smaller companies are already in strategic content marketing, and absolutely they can do the same things. They just do many of the same things, but on a smaller scale. And again, the key is what do your clients really need, and how much do you need? So instead of doing, you know, as many as we do six reports a year that are of this nature, you know, in terms of being really strategic content marketing. And a smaller company may only have one. You know, I can remember when my early days we first started, and it was just purely a matter of the fact that we needed to reach CFOs at that time. So we started with a very small piece of strategic thought leadership that was revolving around just surveying CFOs. And you can today, it's so much easier, particularly for smaller companies, because they can run online surveys, you know, pretty effectively. So it's a matter of really getting your ducks in a row in terms of your audience, who it is that you want to talk to and survey, and then knowing and understanding your market, and coming up with the right topic that you want to delve into, and then being able to put together the materials to do that. But I think smaller companies have just as much opportunity, if not more so, than larger companies. Now, they may not have the global reach of going into 30 countries. You know, that's certainly unique to us as a global player. But if they have reasonably good sales forces with, an excellent client base, they're going to be able to do a very good job of that. And that's where I'd start if I was a small company. I'd focus in very much on just starting on thought leadership relevant to my own client base. You don't even have to go outside of that in some cases.
Okay. Well, we've got to go to break now. When we come back, I want you to tell us a little bit about how do you manage this global team to put out the product? I mean, you talked about very, very diverse membership over 30 countries, so we'll do that when we come back. Meanwhile, we've got to go to break. Don't go away.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick-and-mortar locations or traditional bankers' hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog, Press Pass? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective, plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at vapresspass.com. That's vapresspass.com. VA Press Pass by Voice America. All access, all the time.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the final segment of Global Reach. This is your host, Tay Revez. I'm here with my guest, Karen Schneider. She's the Director of Global Product Marketing and Programs for Capgemini's Financial Services Business Unit. We are talking about strategic content marketing. And when we went to break, you were going to tell us about how you're managing this global team based in 30 different countries. I want you to give an idea of how do you manage such a diverse team with different languages, different cultures, and
sure.
get the best from all of them.
Okay. Well, thank Lord it's not me by myself who does this by any stretch of the imagination. And every time I look at one of our acknowledgement pages in a report, I'm forever reminded of how many people the reports touch just in getting them out the door. And we do have hundreds of people who actually wind up touching a report in any particular instance. So in terms of managing a global team, I'm very fortunate to work in the global sales and marketing group here at Capgemini, and we really do have terrific people on our team. And we are broken up into different groups. So you've heard me mention the market intelligence team, the centers of excellence, the product marketing team, as well as our corporate communications team, and they're all phenomenal. The way in which we manage global teams is very, you know, inherent to our business. As a global consultancy, we have several models for doing that, and it's no different in terms of on our global reports. Each group is, you know, responsible for a very specific function and covers a very specific group of activities. So we are tied at the hip together when we get started on a report. And literally, there will be representatives from each of our teams that are involved from the very beginning of the workshops that start to kick off a report, all the way through the marketing piece. And we have very good ways of doing handoffs, too, as we move more from the development of the report into the what we call the pre-launch stage. There's a lot of overlap that still exists as we're going through pre-launch and the getting ready to launch a report. You know, where we're still very connected between the market intelligence teams, the center of excellence, and ourselves in that engagement. And then as we start to transition, it's just a different weighting of who's leading the effort. But there's a model where we do program management, and there's a group, and we meet literally every single week.
Are you meeting conference call, teleconference?
Yeah.
Do you do in-person?
We do a mixture of both of those. When we do the large workshops where we're looking at key findings and validating our findings and looking at the research that's come in, we have some in-person network meetings where we'll pull in 15 to 20 people from different countries that are representatives for their countries, along with our market intelligence team and our marketing and center of excellence team. And they'll all meet together in person. Those can happen in India. They could happen in Paris. They could happen in Asia. They can happen in the U.S. So we'll do that at least twice during the development process. And then in between that, we are on weekly conference calls with the development team and the marketing teams and the centers of excellence.
Do you have a specific training program for the staff that's engaged in producing the reports?
Each team has a way of training their team for their specific function, and there's a lot of shadowing that goes on between senior people on the team who have been doing it for a little while and then new people that we're bringing in, and people are trained in all aspects, from whether it be how do you do market research to how do you do presentations, how do you handle presentations with clients. How do you do client management? How do you do marketing management? We do a set of training and guides. We're huge documenters on process. So, for instance, my marketing plan has a 400-line item marketing plan that goes through every single channel that we market in and then all the steps that are required to develop assets and to actually go to launch. So it's very extensive.
How do you blend together all the different cultures? How do you take advantage of, say, specialization, cultural specialization?
If I had to say anything that's really unique about, you know, what we do in terms of a team, as a global consultancy, and particularly as also, too, I think some of our European origin has forced, forces that ability. But we're very good at cross-cultural implementation. And, you know, global, because we can implement something anywhere and are often asked as a company to do that across regions. So, you know, a lot of it has to do with both your team managers and your programming managers who who are running some of the workshops as well as the biweekly calls in being able to stick to, you know, a process. And because our teams are all trained around the world the same way and have a consultancy, consulting background, most of us are pretty used to that. So, and if you're not, you get pretty heavily indoctrinated into it very quickly. So the way in which we take advantage of that is like anything. You know, when you're getting insights or you're getting input from different cultures, you have to weigh and balance where they are in the marketplace, their clients, and the expertise that they're bringing to the table. And you learn how to blend without going down to, you know, a least common denominator factor. So always the thing that keeps us the most glued together and also allows us to take advantage of the cultural nuances the most is, where are the golden nuggets in the market? Where are the best practices? Where are the leading factors?
My favorite term.
You know, and if we stick with those things and we lead with excellence in any dimension of what we're talking about, there isn't a culture on the planet that can't relate to that, you know, or won't want to put those golden nuggets forward.
So you know, Karen, I see we've got a call-in with a listener with a question.
Okay.
Can you put that through?
Hello.
Hi. Who's on the line?
Hi, this is Alan Klein from the Marketing Agency Worldwide.
Alan, you have a question for Karen.
I do. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good. I'm great. Calling you from the West Coast, where it's sunny and beautiful. I'm going to ask you a question. I realize you're on a part of the discussion now where you're talking about your reports, but invariably, since so much of what you're talking about has to do with content, it inevitably brings up the thoughts of social media content. I mean, this is just growing, you know, as you know, daily and getting more complex. You know, it started with Facebook and Twitter, and now we've got, you know, Pinterest, Google Plus, LinkedIn, on and on. I'm thinking about smaller companies that you may work with. The big companies obviously have staff to deal with things. How do smaller companies manage to stay on top daily with social media, with having to constantly update content and provide some kind of interaction with their readers?
I think it's tough when you're under-resourced in social media, and I think, you know, the forays into social media for the first time are difficult to manage for a lot of companies, and mainly because it's that same question, twofold. One, how do you manage the content? How do you manage the experts that are talking about the content? And I think, you know, for us in terms of, you know, when we started to engage, it was about small groups and small teams of people with that right domain expertise working in tandem with a marketing person to be able to understand the medium and then understand, you know, how do you utilize content within that medium. So for smaller companies, I think it's again, going back to something we brought up earlier, strategic content marketing is called strategic for, you know, exactly that reason. What are the key strategic pieces that you need to push? What's the strategic content that's the most important? The smaller the scope, the easier it is to manage when you first start out, right? So you pick what's most critical to you, and you literally can do it with one person and one marketing person. And stick to just a few limited channels where you know your audience is living and breathing. Because Facebook may be very, very powerful for, you know, a consumer products company, but it may not be as important to someone specializing in, you know, payments, for instance, in the banking industry, because LinkedIn may be a place where they spend more time. So you need to know that going into it so that you don't waste a lot of time and you have the ability to cover. You don't have to be all things to all people everywhere. So, you know, pick your channel selectively and keep your content limited, and it's a great way to start.
That's great. That is great. One last question. Is there any way, because I'm starting to hear from some companies that there are ways of automating the input, and that your content into social media can be automated, that one entry can, daily entry, let's say, can go out to all of the social media automatically?
I forgot to mention that technology is the other key for a small company and even for a large company, because we wrestle with that too. But content management systems are key. You know, so if you can utilize a content management system that will help you to automate, you know, you basically try to keep your set core messages. You know what they are when you're going out, and you develop a message map and your roadmap for what those key messages are, and then you just reutilize that content by tailoring it to the different channels you're going to use to launch. And a content management system can be very effective for utilizing with social media.
That's great. Thank you so much, Karen.
Alan, thank you for calling in. Karen, going along automation, how do you optimize your report, since so much of this is electronic, for search engines?
You get back to techniques like search engine optimization. Meta tags are absolutely critical. And then, of course, where you're, everybody in the world is now getting much more used to Google Analytics and how to get yourself placed higher in search engine in search engines in general, and then how do you optimize your content so that search engines pick them up. And that's quite an extensive endeavor.
Can you give us some hints about how to do it?
I'm learning a lot, too, in that area. And, it again starts with picking, some very specific areas that you want to make improvements in, understanding where you place today, understanding the basic housekeeping issues of what makes for broken web pages or web pages that are what we consider to be, suboptimal, and then understanding, what the symptoms are of that and then how do you improve that. And how do you change meta tags? How do you change links in order to make sure that they get picked up better? And then a lot of it has to do with, how much are you able to spend money against getting external pickup? Because the more people pick it up, the more the analytics engines pick it up. And, you're playing a game of making sure that you've got a lot of frequency out there in the market in terms of pickups. So it's, again, everybody wants a single answer for marketing, but marketing fundamentally, across the board has not changed in terms of some of the basic principles, and it's about frequency. Everything in terms of being able to carry brands and to have it permeate in the market is about frequency. Even Twitter is about frequency. Look at what people measure. How many tweets did I get? How many page views am I getting? How much is my user experience increasing in terms of the amount of time somebody spends on a page? So frequency is still king in marketing. It's just spread out over channels, and some of the channels are a little newer than others.
So let me switch topic a bit, but one of the interesting things I thought you told me when we were setting up for this show was that we're all going to have to reconfigure our websites to support mobile customers as well as our traditional websites, but we've only got about 3 minutes left to the end of the show. So your reports are basically available for free. What do you do so that your clients feel that there's something special in it for them?
They are available for free in the sense that, yes, so long as you register for our reports, we want more than just you come and hit and run and take. We have people who do that, of course, and that's fine. But we're in this for the long haul, and our clients who work with us are people who wind up coming back to us year after year and spending multi-millions of dollars with us to help them be partners in the industry. So our interest is much more in how do I encourage you and engage you to want to talk to us and have a dialogue with us on a much more ongoing basis. And if you just look at the pure numbers around mobile, right, mobile adoption is not only increasing, it's exploding. And it's going to be exploding in all kinds of emerging markets everywhere. And then some of the emerging markets are actually leading us in terms of usage. So, you cannot ignore a channel like mobile. And the need to optimize for mobile and to optimize websites and content for mobile is going to be critical. You see all these issues popping up now. I'm sure you hate already, advertising happening on your mobile. Who wants to see that? I don't want that. But lots of people, we're going to crack the code on how that's going to become acceptable or not, and how you're going to be able to utilize your mobile to do more and more transactions. The fact that you can go and buy insurance and check your policy or submit a claim.
Let me go back, because what interests me, and I think a lot of our people, and we've got about 2 minutes left, to use the intellectual content to create this interactive dialogue with the customer.
What's your best advice on that?
Know how your customers want their information and through which channel, and pay really big attention to the feedback that they're getting, that you're getting, over how they want their content delivered.
And is that, that's, if I were going to ask you, is that the most important takeaway for our listeners?
I think that is by far the most important takeaway. Giving people the information they want, the way they want it, and where they want it, and when they want it, is absolutely essential to being effective and competing in the market going forward.
That's terrific. Karen, thank you so much. This has absolutely been jam-packed with valuable content. And again, if any of you want a copy of the World Payments Report, just go to the Global Reach host page and click on the Capgemini banner, and it'll take you right to it. Meanwhile, for my guest, Karen Schneider, and myself, we wish you all great success in extending your global reach. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.